Second hour, Next Man Up, 102.5. The Game, Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, broadcasting from the Busy Bee, Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We start the second hour talking some Predators, and to help us do that, we go to the phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean joins us. Alex, thanks for taking a couple moments with us. Excited to have you on.
Hey, thanks, Jake. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a busy week, I'm sure, for you with the news of Chris McFarland being hired as the new president of hockey operations and general manager. Overall, a well-regarded hire by many. What have been your early impressions of Chris McFarland as he comes here to Nashville?
Yeah, I think it's a huge step in the right direction for the organization. For people who are sort of just casual Predators fans, to even the hardcore ones, like pretty much across the board, people are really on board with this because, I mean, Chris McFarland has a lot of experience in a winning organization with Colorado. Prior to that, he cut his teeth in Columbus for a number of years. But the biggest thing that he gained in working with Colorado was how to build a team from the bottom up, right? So when he got there in Colorado in 2015, the 2015, 2016, 2017 Colorado Avalanche, that was pretty much their rock bottom. I mean, they were last in the NHL one of those years, dead last in the division, all three, and then, you know, built it up from there. And it, of course, a lot of it was through drafting with Mikko Rantanen. Nathan MacKinnon was already there when he got there, but then they got Cale Makar. They got some other role players in the draft. And then free agency and trades, you know, getting guys like Nazem Kadri and Artturi Lehkonen and players like that built the team into a perennial winner and then won it in 2022. The question, obviously, a lot of people have is, you know, how much was he responsible for it? And I that was my initial question as well. Like, how much was he responsible for it? How much was Joe Sakic, who is now the president of hockey operations there? And in my studying of this, if you look at everything that the Avalanche talk about with their setup, those two, Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland, were mentioned almost hand in hand every time. I mean, so it's almost like they got half of Joe Sakic here. you could put it that way. But Chris McFarland himself has a number of great ideas. And I just want to say, like, the first week of his tenure with the Predators, we've already seen change. He brought in Rob Blake, which we can talk about. Brian Poyle is no longer there. That was not a decision by Chris McFarland. That was Brian Poyle's decision. But today I have a story up today talking about how he wants to add to the team's data analytics department, which is, he thinks, understaffed, and he wants to add more people to it. So there's a lot of excitement, a lot of movement early on, and if you're a Predators fan, you have to feel good about this so far.
And Alex, you mentioned Rob Blake coming in, Brian Poyle stepping away from the Predators. What are your thoughts on Rob Blake kind of coming in? And it seems like he might be the right-hand man. The former Kings GM joins the Predators front office staff.
Yeah, that was a move that I did not see coming at all. He has connection. I mean, so Chris McFarland, you know, he's known Rob Blake for a while. Obviously, there's connections with the Avalanche there. They've never worked together professionally before now. But I think what McFarland wanted to do was to get someone in the building that he knows has an influence and knows exactly how to maybe lead in a way that the Predators have not had before. The Predators have always had good people leading, like very good people leading. I think he wants someone who is willing to make very tough decisions, that's willing to help him look at things from a deeper, maybe more analytical standpoint, and to have his guy. So he's got his second in command. I mean, look, McFarland's the man in charge. He's the head decision maker. There's no doubt about that. I think that Blake is going to be sort of a right-hand man that's like, here's what I'm thinking. What do you think about this? And then McFarland makes the decision. And that's always important for people to have. What we don't know is what's going to happen next. Is Blake going to just be there in addition to guys like Jeff Kuehlte, who's the assistant general manager and director of scouting, and Scott Nickel, who's over the Milwaukee Admirals and player development. What's going to happen with those guys, we don't know yet. My instinct is that they stay. I think that I don't know that McFarland really wants to get, you know, into the player development side just yet. I think he's more about roster and salary cap and big decisions. And then scouting, obviously, you're not going to see any change with that right now. We're not with the draft three weeks away. The next decisions are interesting, but I do think that the Rob Blake hire was a good one, and McFarland has, you know, got a guy that he trusts in there now.
We're talking to Alex Doherty of The Tennessean, covers the Preds. Alex, I know it's still super early. It's been about a week since we found out about the news of Chris McFarland being the new general manager of the Preds. It sounds like he has a lot of respect for Andrew Brunette, but what is your feel on that situation right now? Do you think Andrew Brunette will be retained as the head coach of the Predators?
I do for now. I see no reason to make a change right now. I know there's a lot of people that might disagree with me there. I think Andrew Brunette's a pretty good coach. He's a young coach. He's learned a lot in his first, you know, 3 years as a full-time head coach. I've seen enough improvement from the roster, considering that the roster has had a very strange few years with an influx of huge talent, or huge names rather, and then also some trying to bring some rookies along. Look at the development of Luke Evangelista last year. Luke Evangelista went from a really disappointing second year to a breakout third year, and is set up for success now. And it found a role, knows exactly how to play in this league. I credit Brunette with that. I credit Ryan O'Reilly with that. A lot of Ryan O'Reilly's resurgence is because of Brunette. So I think there's enough there. Now, as far as like what McFarland may be thinking, if we go back, let me just make a parallel real quick. In 2015, when McFarland arrived, the team had Patrick Waugh as head coach. Things were not going well. The team was on the downward trend. It was at the bottom of the league. They kept Patrick Waugh on for one more year and then fired him after that. And that's when they brought in Jared Bednar, who, you know, Jack Adams winner, Stanley Cup winner, all that. I think we could see a similar thing. Give Brunette a full year here and see how it looks. After that, you might make a change. The other thing is, like, who's out there right now they're going to be interested in? They're not bringing Peter Laviolette back. He's available, but they're not bringing him back. And there's some other options out there, but I just feel like you really don't need to make a change right now. Change the roster first. Change the setup, change the roster, then move on and see what it looks like.
When it comes to McFarland's philosophy on the current state of the roster, he spoke on this a little bit in his introductory press conference, where he mentioned that he wouldn't be trading some of the younger players on the team for older players. But do you think when it comes to his philosophy that he just in general would not trade a lot of the younger players? I feel like we saw that with previous, Barry Trotz and Askarov. Like, I feel like the old staff traded a lot of the younger players. Do you think that will be McFarland's same approach?
I think the only way that he trades a younger player is if he has to attach it as a sweetener for a contract that someone doesn't want to take. Let's take, for example, the Jonathan Marchessault situation. I think Jonathan Marchessault is not a great fit right now. He did not have a good year. It's been a tough couple years. He's got three more years left on his deal at $5.5 million a year. If you have to attach a younger player, and I mean, that could be a draft pick, that could be a prospect you just drafted. If you have to attach a player like that in order for someone to take the full contract and you don't have to retain, he could do that. That's a bit, but that's the only way. I don't think there's any reason that you want to trade. I mean, certainly you don't want to trade Evangelista or Matthew Wood. They're contributing now. But, and then some of the younger players who we haven't seen yet, like Tanner Mullendijk, Ryan Ufko, we've seen a little bit of, Aiden Fink, all these young guys. Like, I think he wants to see what they're like. Yeah. Any trades that come are going to be, let's move a big contract and free up some room. Let's move something around because it's not working right now. That's the Marchessault example. You know, people want to know, what's he going to do about the goaltender situation, UC Saros? It's a very untradeable contract, not just because of the number, because of how he's playing right now. I don't know that he could get someone to take that without having to add a lot that you don't want to add. So he probably just keeps him and sees, you know, if he can improve the defense enough to make Saros a little bit better, make his numbers look a little better. But, you know, other than that, I really don't see a ton of trading on the roster necessarily. Maybe some moves to get certain people in different positions. I think there's some moves to make, but I don't think you're going to look at a huge, at least not yet.
We're talking with Alex Doherty from the Tennessean. Alex, last one, we'll go big picture here. I know that there's been a lot of debate around what the long-term outlook should be for the Preds. Do you go for it? Do you rebuild and tear it down to the studs, or is it a half measure? He kept his cards close to his chest, but what do you think Chris McFarland's philosophy is going to be for this team and the roster building over the next couple of seasons?
I think the important thing is that it would not be fair to say that the Predators could do exactly what the Avalanche did. They really are not in a position to tank and be at the bottom of the league and get a top three pick for 3 years in a row.
Right.
Mostly because they've got players like Stamkos and Yossi and Forsberg and Saros who are with those players now, you're going to be good enough to be at least like kind of close to the playoffs, right? So he can't do that. I do think that he's going to maybe have an approach that's a 3 to 5 year plan. Like maybe in 3 years, if things are just really not improving, you do bottom out, you get the big contracts like Forsberg is almost up, Yossi's almost done, then you can maybe bottom out and get your top guy. But if I had to guess, I would say that within that 3 to 5 year window is when you would see real improvement. And I'll just say this, he was given a 6-year contract that with Bill Haslam. In the end, it's going to be a 6-year deal. I think that tells you right there how long they think it's going to take for this possible, you know, rebound, rebuild, whatever you want to call it, to take. So if it's not going to happen in 2 years, I don't think people need to panic. I think it's going to take a little bit of time. He's methodical. He has a plan. And, I would say 3 to 5 years is when you can say, like, okay, the team is back. They're competing for a Stanley Cup. And they're back to, you know, where we saw about 10 years ago.
Alex, great insights as always. We appreciate you taking some time, and we will be sure to follow along for what will be an important offseason for the Predators coming up over the next few months.
Definitely. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me anytime.
Alex Doherty from the Tennessean joining us with good stuff on the Preds there. We will react to what Alex had to say, talk about what the first week of the Chris McFarland era has looked like, and we are a little over 2 weeks away from the NHL draft as well. All of that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly alongside you. It is a Reaction Monday brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. We're taking all of your thoughts on our phone and text lines as well as on our YouTube chat. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at 102.5 The Game for live shows and exclusive content. Big thanks to Alex Doherty from the Tennessean for joining us in the last segment, going through some of the early decisions of the Chris McFarland era. And the one big one that we've heard so far in the last week was Brian Poile stepping away after, you know, being under his dad and Barry Trotz for so long with this organization. You bring in Rob Blake, former general manager of the Los Angeles Kings. And I agree with what Alex said is, you know, Chris McFarland and Joe Sakic were kind of a team out there in Colorado. And yeah, Sakic was the ultimate decision maker, but I think he did lean on Chris McFarland a lot for the legwork and the day-to-day stuff that goes into building a hockey team. I think Chris McFarland realizes how important it is to have a guy you trust as kind of your go-to guy in the organization. And it seems like Rob Blake is going to be that person for Chris McFarland as the executive vice president of hockey operations. So I liked what Alex had to say there. You asked the question, Parker, about Andrew Brunette. And that is the big question around Nashville right now is, all right, they've made a decision for general manager and the decision maker at the top of the front office. But Andrew Brunette, yes, there's been good stretches of his tenure here in Nashville, but clearly his resume over 3 full seasons, it's not good enough to make you say, yeah, he surely deserves to be back for another year. So that question is going to hang over the head of Chris McFarland until either he addresses it or we just start getting to the point where Andrew Brunette's behind the bench and he's coaching this Predators team heading into 2026, 2027. I agree with what Dalek said of Chris McFarland, when he showed up in Colorado, he was part of that group that saw Patrick Waugh as the head coach struggling. They gave him a full year and then moved on and found Jared Bednar. I could see them going that way, but would it shock me if today, tomorrow, sometime this week, we get an announcement that Andrew Burnett's been let go? No, it wouldn't shock me. I think that there's a lot of different ways that Chris McFarland can go with this, but I do agree with Alex that if we're going off of the track record of what McFarland has been a part of previously, they did give a struggling Patrick Waugh one more year before making that decision to move on and find their guy to be the head coach.
Yeah, neither would surprise me. My gut feel is they are going to keep Andrew Burnett, and the longer that we do not hear anything about it, I feel like it is good for Burnett. But at the same time, I could see a deal where, you know, the Preds closed the season on a really good run, and they looked like they were really fighting and giving max effort every single night. But if you get off to one of those bad starts again, like you have the last 2 years, I don't think Andrew Burnett's going to last that.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what, if Andrew Burnett is the head coach of the Predators for opening night this year, he's going to be feeling the pressure. He's going to be on the hot seat because, you know, Barry Trotz hired him, and Barry Trotz clearly gave Andrew Burnett a long leash and believed in him to work things out. We saw that early on last season when the Preds were the worst team in hockey, and everybody was saying, man, Bruno isn't long for Nashville, and he's going to get let go. And he started to turn things around. And now he leaves you in this situation where it's like, all right, do you keep him? Do you let him go? Barry Trotz, yes, is still in an advisory position for the next year with the Predators, but he's not the decision maker anymore. And if Chris McFarland wants to find his own guy, he's going to find his own guy. But I do agree with you on the point of, you know, every day that goes by from Chris McFarland's introductory press conference that we haven't heard anything on Andrew Burnett, I think no news is good news for Andrew Burnett when it comes to staying here in Nashville. We'll just have to see if he wants to give him a shot to prove himself this year, or if Chris McFarland has some names in mind that he believes could do a better job this upcoming season for Nashville.
Yeah, and obviously when he was asked about, because he was asked about this at his introductory press conference about, you know, his feelings towards Andrew Burnett, it sounded like they had a great deal of respect for each other and that they've known each other for a long time. So it really would not surprise me if he is back. It would actually surprise me more if he was let go.
See, so I said with Corey Wednesday when they were announcing McFarland, I said 65% chance I thought Bruno was gone. So I was leaning no. I'm closer to 50-50 now, and I think every day that goes by, it gets more likely that Andrew Brunette's going to stick around. But I understand the motives for both decisions if Chris McFarland makes them. If you let him go, Andrew Burnett hasn't done anything to solidify himself as the head coach of the Predators. They've missed the playoffs the last 2 years, despite, you know, pretty much going all in back in the summer of 2024. So totally would understand the decision to let him go because Chris McFarland has no ties to Andrew Burnett. He said he's heard nothing but good things and thinks he's a great person. But Chris McFarland, I don't think, would have any issue letting go of Andrew Burnett. But I also understand the idea of Chris McFarland wasn't here, did not get to see Andrew Brunette hands-on and get to watch him run the team last year. So maybe he wants to get that direct opportunity to evaluate Andrew Brunette this year before making a decision one way or another. I understand both sides of it. Trevor asks, would you ride it out with Brunette in his final year if you knew you could have a shot at Bednar next year if Colorado has another underwhelming year? I mean, yeah. If you're told 100% you can go get Jared Bednar next year if you let Andrew Burnett have another year, I'd say sure. I mean, Bednar's proven to be one of the top coaches in the NHL. And I know it can change quickly, right? Like, guys go from top of the league to out on the streets just like that. But I think, yeah, I would ride it out with Burnett, and maybe Chris McFarland has an inkling that Bednar could be available after next year. Obviously, he's not this year. So it's a good thought from Trevor. I'm 50-50 on it right now of whether he's back next year. And I think they're working through all of that right now. But because you had to wait so long to get Chris McFarland, again, I have no problem waiting as long as you feel like you got the right guy, and clearly the Predators do. But your timeline is a little shrunk down now. Chris McFarland gets announced back on June 3rd, and you've got less than a month till the draft. You've got less than a month till free agency. You've got to make a lot of decisions in a short period of time. So I would think, Parker, am I correct in saying, like, if we don't hear anything on Bruno by the end of this week, he's probably coming back next year?
Yes.
Like, I think if they were going to make a move, it would happen this week that they'd say, all right, McFarland's in here. He wants to go another way at coach. We're going to make that decision now. But if you get within a week or two of the draft and free agency and you still haven't even made the move to move on from Andrew Brunette, I think it becomes pretty likely that he's sticking around at least to start next season.
I mean, based on those comments, and again, I know it's early. I know he's been the general manager for not even a week, maybe a week. So it's still super early, but my gut feel as of right now is that Andrew Brunette will be retained. But if you get off to a slow start like you have the last 2 years, he's getting the axe.
No, I do think that there is not going to be a long leash for Andrew Brunette this year if he is back as the head coach. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Any thoughts you have on the Preds? Predemption, Johnny in Vancouver on the YouTube chat says, morning, Jake. Johnny's here. I said this on the morning show and we'll say it here. I will miss Brian Poile. The team in the city I live, the Canucks need a new cap manager and should hire him. After all, Brian Poile's grandfather was the Canucks' first ever GM. Would make sense, right? That's another family connection that he could go to. But you also wonder maybe if Brian Poile wants to carve his own path and try and go somewhere else. I don't know. But, you know, obviously wish him well. Served the Preds organization for a long time. Of course, his father, the longtime general manager of the Predators. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We got lots to get into here. We're going to get to the Titans coming up at 11. That is when they hit the field after a week away from OTAs. They are back on the field for three open practices this week. So we'll talk Titans coming up in the final hour of the show. But with all of the Sorsby madness, we didn't get to talk about the Stanley Cup Finals, which has just been electric so far. And tonight, Game 3, Knicks and Spurs in Madison Square Garden. Can the Spurs avoid a 3-0 series deficit on the road in what is sure to be a raucous environment up there in New York? 615-737-1025. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you. Boxing fans, 1025 The Game and Team Boxing League have your chance to win tickets to see Nashville Smash take on the Atlanta Attack at Municipal Auditorium this Friday, June 12th. Text the keyword FIGHT, FIGHT, to the game text line at 615-737-1025 to enter for your chance to win. Let's get into the Stanley Cup Finals here, Parker, because there's been a lot of championship series out there over the history of sports, and we're only three games in. But this is on pace to maybe be one of the best championship series we have ever seen in any sport. And, you know, it's a high bar. It's a high bar because there are a lot of really great World Series, Stanley Cup Finals, NBA Finals. But what we've seen in these first three games, I mean, 5-4 back and forth win for Vegas. They score with 3 minutes left to win it in game one. Game two, the Hurricanes erase a 2-0 deficit. Vegas gets a goal disallowed. Carolina scores on the power play after the challenge. You go to overtime. Carolina wins it. And then, of course, on Saturday night, 4-0. Mitch Marner with a hat trick in less than 7 minutes in the second period. Then the Hurricanes come back and score three times in a minute, end up tying it at 4 and losing in double overtime on a puck that bounced off the backboards and then off the skate of the goalie and into the net. I mean, what we have seen so far through three games, it boggles the mind, and I really hope, like, I need Carolina to win tomorrow so we can get this 2-2 going back to Raleigh for game five. I want this to go seven because the first three games have been, you know, to use the meme, absolute cinema between the Hurricanes and the Golden Knights.
Two best words in sports, game seven. I was shocked. It was three goals in 39 seconds.
Yes, three goals in 39 seconds for Carolina, made
insane.
It 4-3.
I started tuning out a little bit when it was 4-0 because I thought it was done, and then Carolina came all the way back. This series deserves a game seven.
I know.
I mean, both of these teams are so hot. Usually you think the hottest team would win, but I can't decipher who is the hottest team. Because Vegas, their record is not as good as you would think the team playing at this level would be. And Carolina has been arguably one of the best teams all season. This deserves a game seven.
I'm with you. It was 4-0, and so I was out with some friends Saturday night. We were watching the game out, and then went back to my place, and we came back, and it was 4-3, and I was like, oh my God. And the last goal to tie it was, that was the one that, like, the chaos in the crease, and the puck just kind of slipped into the net.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been so good, and I really hope that this isn't a series that ends in order for it to end in five, Vegas would have to win the next two. So give me Carolina tomorrow. I know that they've got a decision to make on goalie. Frederik Andersen obviously wasn't great and, you know, maybe not completely healthy, but it's been everything you could have asked for in a Stanley Cup Finals through the first three games. Game four tomorrow night out in Vegas. For the NBA Finals, The Knicks, I'm changing my tune. I have been on the Western Conference since the conference finals were set. When it was Spurs and Thunder in the Western Conference Finals, I said, those are your two best teams. One of them is going to win the title. I'm changing my tune. The Knicks are a team of destiny. I mean, it's what, 13 straight wins now?
Which I believe is a new NBA record.
In the playoffs, yeah.
Because I think it was the Warriors who won 12 in a row back in 17.
Yeah, that sounds right. Because they sweep the Cavs that year?
I think they won their first three.
That was KD's first year. Yes, they won the first three, lost game four, and then won it in five. That's what it was. So that was the 70.
Which is what I think is going to happen here.
No, the 73-9 Warriors was the year before KD. And then KD, they went and won in 2017.
Yep.
Yeah, 13 straight wins. They were down 2-1 to the Hawks, won the final three games to take that in six, swept the Sixers, swept the Cavs, and now go on the road and beat the Spurs 2-0 heading back to Madison Square Garden. And, you know, I believe Victor Wembanyama is going to be the face of the league for the next decade as long as he stays healthy, if not more. But down the stretch in that game back on Friday night, I mean, the pass off the back of Stephon Castle that bounced out of bounds, bounced into the hands of Jalen Brunson, who got the foul, ended up making the game-winning free throw. Like, that's just one of those things that Victor Wembanyama, if he's going to be great, you have to have your best in those moments. Biggest moment of the game, you're tied with under 20 seconds to go, try and go win the basketball game, and you turn the ball over, let the Knicks win on your home floor. I know he's only 22 years old, so like there's a long way to go, but those are the type of moments that you can't have if you're going to be one of the greats. And that moment right there ended up costing them a game, and now you're going into Madison Square Garden, which hasn't hosted an NBA Finals game in nearly 30 years, and I'm struggling to see a path for the Spurs to win this series. I think it's going to be go New York, go New York, go, lifting the Larry O'Brien trophy this year.
Team of destiny, man. I said it on Friday's show that I thought if the Knicks, this was my Monday headline, if the Knicks won game two, which they did, they stole both of them on the road in San Antonio, that they would win in five. Because being down 2-0, going back to Madison Square Garden is a position that no team wants to be in. With the way that the Knicks are playing right now, I'd say what we've learned is, listen, I know this debate's been going around about Jalen Brunson and if he's the greatest Knick ever. If they win the finals, I think Jalen Brunson is the greatest Knick ever. I think what we've learned about Victor Wembanyama is this is the era that his greatness officially begins. Still a ways to go because you have to perform at your best when your best is needed, but he's well on his way.
I mean, I think if he wins it, you'd have to have an argument, right? Like, there's obviously a lot of great Knicks out there. Patrick Ewing, Walt Frazier, like Willis Reed. Like, even you look back, I wouldn't put him in the conversation of greatest Knick ever. He never won a title, and the Knicks teams weren't exactly great when he was there. But, like, Melo is known as a huge, like, presence in Knicks history. I do think that if he goes and wins the title this year, he's in the conversation. I would not say he is the greatest Knick ever, but I think you start to put him towards the very top of that list.
Here's my argument is, I mean, you look at that roster and you just don't think, man, that's a finals winning roster.
Right.
Jalen Brunson has single-handedly carried this team. Karl Anthony Towns has played very well, I thought, against Victor Wembanyama, but outside of that, it's Josh Hart, it's Mikal Bridges, it's guys like that who are good, but Jalen Brunson's carried this team.
Yeah, the Knicks are interesting because it's a team made up of guys who basically were told that they couldn't be the number one option on a championship team. Jalen Brunson was let go from Dallas because they wanted to invest in Luka and, you know, trade him away a couple years later. But they were like, we have our ball handler. We don't need Jalen Brunson. We have Luka Doncic. All right, well, you see where they are now. You look at the Timberwolves, and it's like, all right, well, they had Karl Anthony Towns, and he was the number one pick, but he was never going to be good enough for that team to go win a title. So they built around Anthony Edwards. All right, well, you send him to the Knicks. OG Anunoby with Toronto. It was like, oh, he's a good player, but he's never going to be good enough to be Kawhi Leonard or, you know, Kawhi Leonard put the Raptors on his back in 2019 and won that title. He's not going to be that. And Mikal Bridges, the Suns shipped him off because they wanted Kevin Durant. The Nets couldn't win with him. And it's like all these guys come up and it's like none of them were good enough to be the guy somewhere else, but together they formed a team that is capable of winning a championship. And I think that's really cool to see. And yeah, some of them are just, you know, it's the Villanova Wildcats reincarnated.
Yep.
But I just think it's cool to see these guys who were, they all had high expectations elsewhere, but were shipped off and have come together to form an NBA champion team if they can win two more games.
So Jalen Brunson in game one, did you think that was a good game from Jalen?
It wasn't his best game. He scored 31.
He still had 30. That's what I'm saying.
But on 31 shots.
And had the knee issue too.
Right.
Hurt his knee.
So Jalen Brunson, I don't think has played his best game in either of these games, really, which is kind of scary if you're the Spurs. But in the clutch moment, he came through with a shot to tie it. And then he was able to get the ball and make the free throw that ended up winning the game. Now, you would have liked to have him make both of them, but he ended up doing enough to win the game, which Victor Wembanyama hasn't so far in these first two games of the series. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals. Lots going on, and excited for Game 3 of the NBA Finals tonight in Madison Square Garden. We'll talk about that game. And if the Knicks win it, no one's come back from 3-0 in the NBA. I don't really know if the Spurs are going to be able to do it. Big one tonight up there at MSG. 615-737-1025. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game, finishing up the second hour on this reaction. Monday, getting ready for NBA Finals Game 3 tonight inside Madison Square Garden. Knicks trying to take a 3-0 series lead. I was thinking about it last night, getting ready to talk about this series and, you know, the Knicks, they've gotten off to a great start. And I will say the comparison I'm going to make, the first two games were in Phoenix in 2021 when the Suns went up 2-0 on the Bucks and Devin Booker was playing out of his mind and it looked like the Suns were going to roll to a title. And I remember, I'm a Suns fan. I was convinced the Suns were about to go win their first championship. And things flipped. Giannis Antetokounmpo started making championship-level plays. He had a huge block on DeAndre Ayton. He was making play after play necessary to go win a title, and they ended up winning four straight games and taking the series in six. Not saying that's going to happen, but when you have a player like that, like Giannis was the freak before Victor Wembanyama, right? He was the Greek freak, and it's like, man, this dude's 6'10", but he can do everything. And, you know, he started to develop a jumper. Well, Victor Wembanyama's 7'4", and he can shoot threes from the logo, and he is the best player on the floor at all times. Like, maybe not every game he plays like the best player, but he is the most talented player on the floor at all times and can take over a game. That's what I would task Victor Wembanyama with. It's a team game. You're going to need the rest of your team to step up, whether that's, you know, some of the star players that you have, Stephon Castle. Why am I blanking on the pick that Dylan Harper.
Yeah, Dylan Harper.
Completely blanked on his name. Dylan Harper. You got Julian Champagny, who's hit 7 threes in these first 2 games. You need all those guys to step up. Our friend Luke Kornet, Vandy alum. But if the Spurs are going to steal Game 3 and get back into this series, it's going to fall on the shoulders of Victor Wembanyama. He needs to have a game, maybe not statistically like he had in Game 1 at OKC in the Western Conference Finals, but a game where he has that level of impact. Game 1 in OKC, the Spurs had no business winning that game, but Victor Wembanyama willed them across the finish line for a double overtime win. You are going on the road again into a hostile environment in what is a must-win game. Victor Wembanyama has to go out and play out of his mind if he's going to get the Spurs to a 2-1 series and at least keep their chances in the realm of reality, right? Like, if you go down 3-0, maybe you're able to steal a game or two, but you're not winning 4 straight, especially the way the Knicks are playing right now. This is a must-win game. Victor Wembanyama has to be at his best right now.
And it's kind of weird that we're talking about the Spurs this way because they don't have any playoff experience, but they haven't looked like that really throughout the finals up until this point. And then it's like they play New York and all of a sudden they look like a team that has never been to the playoffs. Victor Wembanyama is certainly capable of playing that way, and you're right, he is the most talented player on the floor. I'd say, you know, him and Jalen Brunson, 1A, 1B type thing, but you're going into Madison Square Garden. That place is going to be rocking tonight. That is a tall task for you to play your best in that type of atmosphere, being down 2-0. He's capable of doing it, but him actually playing that way is a completely different conversation.
And he said it after the game, after game 2, that he maybe let the emotions of that Western Conference Finals win get the better of him. And I totally understand it. That's the defending champs, the team that's been the best team in basketball all year long. And it was like, you beat the boogeyman. All year it's been, Wemby's been great. He's been one of the best players in the league, but can they get by Oklahoma City in the playoffs? And I think the emotions of doing that and going to Oklahoma City and winning that game 7, it's like that can be tough to come back from. The letdown of that and having to refocus your mind to get ready for a team that is on fire right now, a team that was much better rested than you in the Knicks, and have to go out there with that same fire and that same fight. And clearly this Spurs team has not been the same as the team that was able to beat the big bad Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference Finals. They've had a couple of days off here. They finally got 2 days where they can refocus, they travel. Victor Wembanyama has to go and play maybe not the game of his life, but he has to be the best player on the floor tonight if the Spurs are going to win this game. I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a good game. I don't think that the Spurs are going to just go down easily, but the way the Knicks are playing right now, and I'm telling you, there's a lot of great environments in sports, and I wouldn't put the NBA as one of them typically, right? Like, when you look across sports and say, man, what's the most raucous environments? College football comes to mind. Some NFL stadiums come to mind. College basketball. Even like postseason baseball and hockey are electric. Yeah. I don't know if I'd put playoff basketball, at least in this era, in that same bucket, right? In the past, sure. But I just don't know if the crowd's energy has as much of an effect. It's going to tonight. Like, that arena is going to be absolute pandemonium with how long Knicks fans have waited for this and them having a 2-0 series lead heading into it. Now, I know some of it has to be dulled down because the president is going to be there. So, like, they canceled some of the watch parties and all that. But I still don't know if it's going to matter. That is going to be a raucous environment, and the Spurs are going to have to handle that tonight if they want a chance to win.
Yeah, I'd say it's that way with most professional environments compared to college. At least that's how I feel. But in the NBA, you think of Madison Square Garden, which is the mecca of sports.
Yep.
You might think, you know, when the Bulls had those 2 three-peats and how the United Center was, that might be up there. And in the NFL, what, Lambeau, Arrowhead, some of those stadiums. But other than that, you don't typically think of those professional environments as having the same feel as some of the college.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think just median environment. College is way above the pros, but this one is going to be up there with anything that you've seen before. And I'm excited for tonight. Justin says on the text line, I haven't really cared much about the NBA for many years, but Spurs versus Knicks has been a good matchup. It will be disappointing if the Spurs get swept with how hard they played against OKC. And I agree with you. That's why I'm rooting for the Spurs tonight, because I want to see good series. And I do think the Knicks win. Like, at this point, with two wins on the road, the Spurs are going to have to win two games in Madison Square Garden, and I don't know if that's going to happen. So I would go Knicks in six, but I would like to see the Spurs at least show a little fight and get back into it tonight. Big one up there in New York. Spurs trying to avoid a 3-0 series deficit while the Knicks trying to get a stranglehold on their first championship in decades. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have any thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, let's talk some football. The Titans are back on the practice field in just a couple of minutes, returning for OTAs. They've got three open practices this week. We'll talk about what we want to see, and also looking at the players who need to take the biggest jump for the Titans to have success this year. We'll talk about all of that coming up in our final hour. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.